HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 95, recorded live Monday, January 7th, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott and Carl discuss the year 2007 in review for developers.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes from HanselMinutes.com. It's good to be back talking to you and talking to Scott again. Hi, Scott.
Hello, sir.
How was your paternity leave?
Well, I'm still on like 3 hours sleep. Baby's up every couple of hours. We're tired, but, you know, it's good. He's about six and a half, seven weeks old now. He's about 12 pounds, eating well, healthy baby, all the fingers and toes, so we're happy.
What's his name?
His name's Tabo. Tabo means happiness.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're pretty excited, and Zenzo is enjoying the little baby.
Awesome. Well, give my best to Mo and the kids, and let's talk about the year in review.
All right. So, yeah, this is the first fresh Hansel Minutes of the new year here. And I was thinking we'd basically just talk a little bit about 2007 and, you know, what it saw and then what we're going to see change in 2008.
Going to make some bold predictions?
I don't know if I've got any bold. Every time I come up with a bold prediction, it ends up being completely wrong. So, gosh, I don't know. I mean, Silverlight 2.0 will ship, I think. That's not a bold prediction, considering that it's the 1st of January, right?
Yep.
That's a good question. You caught me off guard.
Well,
there,
that's
Carl.
All right. We'll get to that. Now let's talk about changes for the developer. What's changed? What changed this year for the developer?
Well, I think that it's fair to say that .NET 1X is seen its day, and that we all should be moving off of .NET 1.0 and at least being on 2.0. When I say 2.0, I really mean the 2.0 CLR, not necessarily whether you're on 2005 or 2008.
Right.
But it's really time to be inside the .NET 2.0 CLR.
Yes.
I would think. I think that, you know, in the coming months when we see the release of Windows Server 2008, I think that it's definitely going to be time to upgrade those 2000 servers or 2003 servers that you might have.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, there's no excuse to be running a Windows 2000 server that I can think of. I mean, all of my servers are 2003.
Right.
And for me, the really compelling reason to upgrade to 2008, I've actually just upgraded a couple of machines to 2008, one of the release candidates just recently, is the virtualization stuff. Right, I mean, being able to have the built-in virtualization. So I've taken a couple of old machines, including a couple Win98 and NT4 machines, and just kind of virtualized them and stuck them on that machine so I don't have to think about them anymore. So I would say, actually, I'm thinking that 2008 virtualization is going to hit the mainstream if it hasn't already, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's certainly good.
I don't think that's a controversial statement.
No, I don't think so either. It's certainly some great new stuff. Not necessarily developer-oriented, but, you know, certainly developers bump up against that stuff.
I was going to say, I think that is developer-oriented. I think that what server, more and more, the developers have to think about what server that they're going to be running on, because there's services that are available to them on those servers that they may not ordinarily have. I mean, I still get emails sometimes saying, you know, why can't I get .NET 2.0 to run on Win95?
True enough.
So you never really know what you're going to be up against. And, of course, if you've got a 2008 machine or a Vista machine and that's what you're developing for, you've already got those services on it. You know, you can develop for Avalon,
sure.
I mean WPF.
Yeah, honestly, I'm looking for a segue to Visual Studio 2008, which is really the big story of 2007.
Yeah, I've switched over everything to 2008.
It really is wonderful.
Initially, I was concerned that, you know, I'm going to keep a 2005 machine around just in case.
Right.
Because I didn't really kind of believe that the multi-targeting was going to work. But, you know, every application that I had that was a 2.0 2005 application just upgraded very cleanly and was able to still build. So being able to target 2.0 from 2008 definitely made it worthwhile to upgrade and then get all of the benefits of the IDE. And then, of course, CodeRush 3.0 is coming out and supports 2008. So then that was the last reason to to wait.
Right.
And since the Visual Studio 2008 is based on the 2005 code base, you know, it's got all of the stability. I've only had it crash maybe once or twice, and it was an add-in that caused the crash.
Hmm.
So I don't feel bad at all about recommending Visual Studio 2008 for folks to start using as their main machines. You've switched over, haven't you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'm loving it. Of course, Visual Studio and .NET aren't the only things that have changed for developers this year. There have been a whole suite of languages that have people learned about this year. A lot of people in the .NET space learned about this year, especially the dynamic languages.
Well, yeah, there's all the stuff going on with the DLR. I think that in 2008, we're going to see a lot of information going on about when the DLR will be considered, finished. And I think that since Ruby on Rails 2.0 finished basically just at the end of last year in December, that's going to get people more excited about Rails. And then we've got the MVC framework for ASP.NET that'll be coming out in the first half of 2008. Balancing all this stuff, there's a lot of interest in dynamic languages, in alternate or alternative web frameworks. I think there's definitely a resurgence of MVC, separate from ASP.NET MVC. You've got Rails, of course. You get to Django and different MVC frameworks. I think it'll be really interesting to see how the monorail team, decides to integrate things. Are they going to pull ASP.NET MVC in and extend it and expand on it? Add things like the Castle Windsor inversion of control container and things like that. And then to see, are we going to see a Rails on .NET this year? I don't know. Will we see Ruby.NET and running Rails? Or will we find people writing ASP.NET MVC applications and using Rails for their views, perhaps?
Yeah.
You're not much of a Rails guy, right? You haven't drank that Rails Kool-Aid yet.
No, I really haven't. And quite frankly, I'm very happy with the tools that I have for what I do personally. But I'm not probably a good judge I'm not a normal developer,
No, yeah, that's cool though. I think it is about being happy in your own skin and being happy with what you're using. But I think we can always learn from these other alternative frameworks. When I say alternative, I mean not whatever we are using. In this case,
I've seen it. I've seen Ruby on Rails, and I like it. I mean, I think it's really cool for what it does, and it is great to look at these things and learn from them.
Have you played with Subsonic?
With Subsonic?
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
I think that Subsonic is really coming into its own this year, and I think that now that that Rob is going to be working for Microsoft, that there's going to be a little bit of a war, I think, in 2008 about how are we going to generate our data access layers, because I think that there's more choice now than ever before.
Well, and I think there might be more choice than people signed up for, and that may be part of the problem. There are so many ORM tools and things that approach ORM, code generation, middle layer generators. There's so much now. And then there's stuff that Microsoft has. So I don't envy people who are trying to make those decisions, because there's so many tools to look at, and so many people seem to have success with a lot of them. So
yeah, it might be time for us to do a show about that, because you've got Subsonic and you've got Castle Active Record, which is the data access layer that comes with the Castle project. It's a implementation of the Active Record pattern for .NET. You've got things like doodads from my generation, and you've got all the different ORM things that we're familiar with.
The list is literally 100 products long. Easy.
Well, and definitely the list of ones that people would shortlist is probably at least 10.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. And if you consider that making a decision like that is a fairly constraining thing. I mean, you are really limited to what your DAO is going to allow you to do.
Well, we also learned about the entity framework this year.
Yeah, and that's going to be a real point of confusion, and I think we should definitely focus on doing a couple of shows on that, because I think that there's some confusion, and I'd like to hear back from listeners on this, that there's some confusion in the community between the ADO entity framework and link to SQL, and how one is more of a link over the physical representation of your database, while the entity framework provides an extra layer of abstraction to give you a more logical views that isn't necessarily married directly to the database as tightly as link to SQL is. But those aren't obvious things to figure out. And I think that we should definitely do the best we can to help clarify that Because, you know, Microsoft is, I've learned this in my couple of months of working for Microsoft, is that they have this term co-opetition.
Yeah.
Where they're working together, but they are competing against each other.
Well, we talked about this on .NET Rocks with Daniel Simmons back in April, show 226. And that was one of my first questions, which, you know, what slots do these technologies fit in? He did a really good job of sort of separating them out. So I would encourage people to listen to that.
Yeah, I think that anything that we can do to provide a little bit of elucidation around these things, because there's all this information that's coming at you, and then now that 2008 has just come out, you're going to see kind of the next, the 0.5 wave, I call this. This is kind of like, a new version of something comes out, and then all the power packs and the add-ons and the things that are tweaks and little modifications to that new released thing will come out. There's kind of a sine wave that happens with Microsoft. You know, 2005 came out, Visual Studio. Yeah. And then there were all these kind of additions and the Ajax framework, you know, Atlas and add-ons, the web project add-on. I think we'll see the same thing with 2008, where after 2008 comes out, of course, we're going to see the ASP.NET 3.5 extensions, which right. will include MVC. They'll include the new dynamic data stuff. People might feel that this is kind of an overwhelming crush of stuff coming in from Microsoft.
Yeah.
And, can they just stop for a month and release nothing so that we can just kind of soak it in? But, they are trying to move the ball forward, although they are, in fact, there's so many people at Microsoft that they're kind of competing against each other. I think that this will be the year that people will figure this stuff out. Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But this will be the year that we start to get our brain around that. I remember when .NET first came out that I was just completely overwhelmed, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to. And they kept stressing how many methods there were. Remember,
right.
you'd go and
yeah.
see a .NET, you'd go see a .NET presentation, and, well, here's how reflection works. Ah, and I'll do a little thing to find out how many methods there are in the .NET framework. Ah, there's 280,000.
yeah, exactly.
Good luck. They kept stressing how big it is.
Right, and when 2.0 came out, it grew by a factor of like 5 or something.
Yeah, and then with 3, you know, it's like there's definitely more than you can handle, and this is why I think this is the year of the leaky abstraction. We're going to start seeing abstraction layers to make things simpler. You know, MVC has a lot sitting underneath it, but ultimately the abstraction that you talk to is simpler.
All right. Well, getting off the developer thing, now let's talk about applications that came out. I guess this is sort of the year of the Ajax web application. It's in its shining glory.
There have been some apps coming out this year that have completely blown my mind in the sense of I think we asked ourselves last year, could an application come out where it would be so nice in the browser and so fast and so clean that I wouldn't miss, I wouldn't wish it was a fat client.
Right.
Because there was a time in the beginning there of 2007 when an application would come out and I'd go, oh, this would be great as a smart client.
Right.
And then they got better and they got better and they got better. An app that I'm completely enamored with right now is Mint.com.
Mint.
Gotta check this out. Mint.com. This is the kind of the closest thing to Microsoft Money or Quicken in the browser that I've seen. Last year I was really into Wasabi.com, which is an online money manager application. Mint.com has a little bit different perspective. In Wasabi, you upload your data from your desktop. So you basically run an application in the tray and you upload your data. With Mint, you have to trust them a lot more. You actually have to give them your bank login information. But if you can get past that trusting issue, they'll automatically download your transactions. They'll make charts and graphs. They'll send you events like low balances. And one of the things that's cool is that if they get a complete perspective of your money, they will offer you things like, your Visa is at 7%. And if you switch over to this Visa, you can get 4%. So they have that kind of holistic view. And the entire thing is Ajax. It's clean. It's crisp.
And that's why it's free, because they try to sell you financial services.
Oh, yeah. Their business model is clear. Their partners are basically involved in the financial services.
Right.
But the thing that I think is significant is that Mint is representative of people who aren't Gmail understanding Ajax.
Yeah.
So say that again. I mean, Gmail was like the Ajax app in the year of Ajax. And I think Mint and applications like it are really pointing out that other people can make really full-featured applications that use Ajax, like Zoho, if you've seen the Zoho suite.
No, I haven't.
At Zoho.com. These guys are basically kind of nipping at the heels of Google Docs. spreadsheets, presentations, documents. You know, it's Microsoft money in the browser.
Wow.
People are definitely watching Zoho, all Ajax, all the time. Crazy stuff. Well, even Gmail this year came out with a pile of new updates. We saw IMAP support for Gmail, which was huge.
Is Zoho free also?
Zoho has they have a free version, and they have a pay subscription version.
Okay.
Now, Gmail came out with IMAP access, which was massive. I stopped using POP to talk to my Gmail.
Right.
They came in with support to talk to AOL Instant Messenger from Gmail Talk.
Mm-hmm.
They've got finally a contact manager. It's gotten faster. And then all the new stuff, if you've seen in Google Maps, Local now has this Google Maps My Location. So if you take your phone and you go to google.com/GMM, Google Mobile Maps, they've got this feature called My Location where they basically, kind of a poor man's GPS, they figure out where you're located based on what cell tower you're talking to.
Well, you know, some phones have GPS built in and their software doesn't utilize it. So I know Windows Mobile 5, I believe, was the first Windows operating system to give you the APIs to it.
Right.
But I guess the problem with GPS on a phone is just the amount of memory it takes to have those maps in there, huh?
Well, with Google Maps, of course, they're streaming those maps down as you move. So the amount of memory that it uses is very small because it's throwing the maps out that you can't see.
Right.
And it'll allow, if you have a GPS in your phone as hardware and you don't have an application to use it, you know, Google Maps will let you access that.
Really? You can also Google Maps will work with the GPS in your phone?
Absolutely. So if you have a GPS or you have an external one, you can plug it into the port. It'll use the GPS that's in your phone, or you can use the poor man's version of My Location where it'll use your cell tower to figure out where you are.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
We ought to talk more, Scott.
We should, actually.
All right. Let's move on to games.
Yeah. You know, this was the year for games. I mean, I'm not a huge gamer. Like, I'll play a game about halfway through, and then I'll say, wow, that was a really satisfying experience. I get it.
Yeah.
And then once I realize that I'm personally not playing the game anymore, it's just me versus the developer, that's when the game kind of like loses its luster for me.
Right, right.
But, man, 2007, I mean, what games came out this year that just completely blew my mind? I mean, Call of Duty 4 was about the closest thing to playing a movie that I'd ever seen.
Halo 3.
Halo 3 came out. Not the standout for me this year, actually.
Yeah.
I would say I would play Call of Duty 4 over Halo 3. Another game I've been playing is called Mass Effect, which is about the closest thing to playing a science fiction book that I've ever seen.
Huh.
People think it's a shooter. It's not. It's absolutely an RPG. It's a role-playing game with something like 270,000 lines of dialogue. It's got actors that you recognize, like Seth Green, who are doing the dialogue.
Huh.
You can make the person, your main character, look like you if you want to by modifying their face. And then it's just amazing. There's like 150 hours of content in this just amazing game called Mass Effect.
It's a little scary.
Well, and then when are you going to find 150 hours? I mean, once you have family, and the only time that I get this is, you know, between 11:45 and 12 at night is the only time I get a chance. But still, games like that, absolutely amazing.
Yep.
You know, of course, BioShock was unreal. I recommend BioShock. These are all in 1 year. I mean, you would hope for a year with one good game like this, and we had like six.
Yeah.
And actually, I finally found another game for my Wii. You know, I've got the Nintendo Wii. I know you guys have got it as well.
Yep.
The wife loves playing tennis, but I felt like for the last year, I bought this $250 tennis simulator. You know, when's my next game going to come out? What else can I play? When's a more advanced tennis game? But then Metroid came out. And,
Metroid?
I've been playing Metroid. Metroid.
Metroid.
Yeah, Metroid. Metroid. Metroid Corruption. And it is a first-person shooter, but it doesn't use a controller like you would in Halo. Your character, Samus, has this arm with a gun on it, and that is your Wii controller hand. And then you use the nunchuck to move around. And it's kind of the most innovative way to move around a first-person shooter that I've ever seen.
Wow.
And it really has made the Wii a very serious... I mean, it's not just the game for Wii Sports plus Mario. I mean, there's more to the Wii than that. And I think that seeing...
Well, I always thought that it was revolutionary and that the low-hanging fruit was the sports, but that it really opens up the doors for game makers to be creative with what they can do with this controller.
Right.
And no, I don't think it's just a $250 tennis simulator. It's just because the games aren't out there yet.
Well, but the question is, are they making better games? I mean, the hardware is unreal. If you look for, I think his name is Johnny Chung Lee, Google for Johnny Chung Lee. And this is a guy who, basically he's got a website. So search for Johnny Chung and then the Wii. And he is basically taking apart the Wii and making something interesting every week with it.
Yeah.
And using the Wiimote, that's called the Wiimote. Wiimote C Sharp library from the Coding for Fun guys. Johnny Chung has created, finger tracking. He's got an application with free source code for a low cost multi-point interactive whiteboard using the Wii. He's got a really amazing video you've got to see about head tracking. So you're basically making a desktop three-dimensional virtual reality display by putting a pair of glasses on your head.
Wow.
That has a little IR emitter that pretends to be the IR bar and then talk to the Wiimote. He's got the library. He's got the program in C Sharp.
You know what I like? And I like the finger tracking thing. So he's got like, it says using an LED array and some reflective tape, you can use the infrared camera in the Wii remote to track objects like your fingers in 2D space. This lets you interact with your computer simply by waving your hands in the air, similar to the interaction seen in the movie Minority Report.
Yeah. And,
Very cool.
These are things you can do yourself. You can play with this. The thing that people don't realize about the Wii, it is all written in C Sharp.
Yeah.
The thing people don't realize about the Wii is that it's the hardware built into the Wiimote that has actually an infrared camera with built-in hardware blob tracking of up to four different points at 100 hertz. So you think about that in terms of what can a webcam do.
Oh, wow.
We're talking about a 1024 by 768 IR camera that does this blob tracking in hardware.
That's so awesome.
People need to pay attention to this guy and start writing some games. But I don't know if the games are being developed, but the potential for the Wii hardware is just, it's obscene. It's fantastic. So I'm really excited about that. And there's actually another thing that's coming out for the Wii this year called the Wii Fit that is going to be a pad that you stand on, like a rigid pad, not a soft pad like Dance Dance Revolution, that will be able to detect the pressure on the bottom of your feet. So then you can do yoga. And it will tell you.
Interesting.
It knows whether you're balanced or not. And then it comes with a yoga application. So I think the potential for exercise applications that will now be able to detect your feet as well as your hands using the remote.
All right. So let's look forward to 2008. And, you know, I know that you, now that you work for the man, you know, you're privy to inside information. We don't want you to divulge anything that you can't divulge, but you must be seeing some trends happening in technology, not for just for developers, but for applications and for games, and you know, give us.
Well, these are just personal predictions. Then, so let's just talk about some ideas. I think that if you've seen Google Gears, of course, right? Gears gives you persistence within the browser. I think this will be the year where that gets figured out, where we're going to get local persistent storage in the browser. It may not necessarily be clean, like built into the browser. But I think that if Firefox 3 builds Google Gears support in, or if people start building a cleaner library around the isolated storage things inside of Silverlight, such that we can use that storage in lieu of cookies, I think that's going to take the web to a new level. We'll see things like Gmail have Google Gears support. We've already seen Google Reader built in support for Gears. So the idea that the offline web may happen. So all this time while we've been waiting for smart clients to support things like offline, I think that Ajax is going to actually catch up and lap them. It's going to get done faster.
One of the great things about the browser is that the data isn't on the client. So what are the kinds of applications that you see where there's a local database that the browser can access?
Well, just like Outlook gained greatly when it had offline support, when you could fire up Outlook on an airplane, put a bunch of emails in your outbox, and then sync when you got back down. There are applications that will provide value if they have that ability. So either you've got calendaring or inbox things, money management, RSS,
but that also means a lot more client-side code.
No, it's about a clean abstraction layer. If you look at the stuff that Google Gears does, and you think about this as a kind of a write-through cache, you will be able to make data access layers in JavaScript that will basically say, give me this thing. I don't care whether it's coming from the internet or whether it's coming from local storage. It'll keep track of freshness.
Well, and that plays well with Silverlight 2.0 as well, doesn't it? Because a Silverlight 2.0 app, yes, it's delivered with the browser, but it's really rich. It's got rich client support.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I think that Silverlight or Flash will offer that a pure AJAX application doesn't, is that with those applications, the code is down. It's pretty much handled. With AJAX, if you look at how to write AJAX code against Google Gears now, your AJAX application, if it's going to work offline, has to really think about what part of me is in memory.
Yeah.
What's cached, what's not.
Right.
It's going to be careful to go and, you know, call for things that aren't available yet, whether those things be images or other resources. So it's going to be an interesting thing, but this is definitely, I think, the year of the offline web.
Very good. Well, we'll see if any of those predictions come true. And, I'm with you. I think you're absolutely right about those trends.
I hope so. We'll see. If I'm not, then we'll make up something else next year at the 2008 wrap-up.
All right, Scott. Thanks very much. And we'll see you next time on Hansel Minutes.